Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking about the exhibition that's at the Museum of International Folk Art, or is about to open there, which is called Dancing Shadows. It's about shadow puppets of Indonesia. Right now, I would like to welcome Maida Rogerson. She's the author and performer of the one-woman show Other Arrangements, which is going to be happening at the Santa Fe Center for Spiritual Living starting March 6th and 7th. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So this is a show that goes for 2 weekends, and we'll talk about a little more at the end where how to find out more about it. But this is a show about a story of a woman who has a stroke. She's happy. She's energetic. She's then suddenly is completely incapacitated. She has to go through rehabilitation. This isn't your story. Is it the story of somebody you know?
It is the story of somebody I know, and it wasn't my story. But when I started to write this, I did it over a year-long period in Tanya Taylor's class, and about 6 months into it, I fell off a ladder and broke my foot, so it kind of became a bit my story. But in fact, the story is based on a friend of mine, Irving Warhaftig, who's very well-known in the city. He's an older man, and he's recovering from his second stroke. And I've visited him many times in hospital and in rehabilitation centers. And he's such a very special man. He's very attuned to the outside and works very hard to get back on his feet, which he's doing. But he has a tremendous sense of his inner life and is able to share that with you. And I thought it was such rich material that I, you know, added, of course, a lot of my own, but it really is modeled after a lot of his experience in rehab.
Now, Irving is the name of one of the characters in your story.
I know. When I started to write the show, and Irving actually became was kind of an almost lover, I said to Irving, I use names often when I'm writing that are familiar to me because then I can get the characteristics and everything. I said, I'll change your name. And he said, oh, please don't. I'm so flattered. So I've left it in there. So I want to just announce publicly that we are not having anything. No affairs.
Well, and it's interesting because the character that you portray is a woman who was not so very happily married, but faithful to her husband and had a sort of a semi-functional marriage. But she met this man named Irving when she was, I guess, in her 40s.
Yes.
Fell madly in love with him. They decidedly didn't have an affair because
right.
She was a good girl. And she meets him in the nursing home when they're both recovering, he from a stroke and she from... she from a stroke and he from a heart attack.
That's right. That's right.
And what's so interesting and I think so real is that the same chemistry that was there when you were 40 or 16 or 35 is there when you're in your 60s, 70s, or whatever.
It's still there. And I was so happy to write that little bit. And I had some thoughts about it. Now, is this real, or could this be real, or is it real? And when we did a performance, I did an excerpt from the show in December. And after the show, a woman came up to me and she said, that's my mother. She said she's in a nursing home. She's got a little tiny bit of Alzheimer's. But she and the man next door are just so in love, and it is the sweetest thing I ever saw. But I really wanted to put that in. I have a couple of things that I wanted to stress as a senior myself, and I find that some seniors start to kind of shut down in their expectations after they reach a certain age. Granted, there's usually a lot to deal with. Your health does deteriorate. You know, you do have aches and pains. And I find that some people think that, as I say in the show, there are no surprises left in store except bad ones. But here's this woman who is in the worst possible circumstance in her life. I mean, she's a very controlling, powerful woman, and for her to be incapacitated is very difficult. And then she meets Irving again, and it is like the most beautiful love affair, I think.
And he remembers a line from a poem that she had recited.
That's right.
Decades
That's
earlier.
Right. That's right. It is kind of how they met at a party. He was also a poet and written a book of poetry, and she hears him saying in passing, well, everybody's fawning all over him, and she decides, of course, she's not going to do that. She'll be quite aloof. And she hears him saying in passing, yes, I know that new poet, Mary Oliver, but she's not the real thing like Thoreau. And, of course, my character, Beatrice, always has to put her
goes
in.
Bananas.
And she said, oh, you know, she just discovered Mary Oliver and was so entranced with her. And she said, Thoreau's wonderful with his high ideals and with his love of nature, but where's his passion? Where's his soul? He could never have written as Mary Oliver has written. Not often, but now and then there's a moment when the heart cries aloud, yes, I will be that wild darkness. Yes, I will be that long blue body of light. And this kind of plays a theme throughout the kind of, you know, that when they meet again, he recites this to her. So it's, I just like that part.
We're talking to Maida Rogerson about her one-woman show, Other Arrangements, which is going to be performed this weekend and next. So these two people fall in love, and of course, I think one of the reasons that people have lower expectations when they get to that age and that kind of debility is, I mean, and she says this in the show, well, we would have perhaps liked to make love, but we would have required the entire nursing staff to move us.
Yeah, one to arrange my limbs, some to monitor blood pressure, and others to kind of move us up and down in the appropriate rhythms. But she also says, and I think this is really a lovely moment in the show, she says that we spend all the time we can together, all our free time. We read together, we listen to music, and sometimes we just grow quiet and we look into each other's eyes. It's not sex, but it's an exquisite intimacy.
And this, the profundity of that exists at really every stage of life. And yet, when it happens at that stage of life, people infantilize it. They say, oh, and it, everything becomes, oh, they're so cute.
They're
and
so sweet.
Somehow, there's the dignity is removed from it.
Well, that's a very, very good point. And that's actually what I wanted to address. I guess my main themes in the show is that, well, I have a kind of a rant about it. I say when, you know, when you start to get older, your relatives feel they can make your decisions for you. And I've known many people have had to sell their houses and had to move into senior communities just because their relatives thought so. And I say, I look around and I see young people and I don't assume they want to live in a, you know, big conglomeration. Why do you assume elderly people do? And then towards the end, I feel we upset the balance in the nursing home, and the superintendent gets a little edgy, because I think what we do with our affair is remind people that we're not just broken bodies. You know, it's very easy to look at a person and see their broken foot or withered arm, or notice they have a spongy mind, and I say, you know, we are still full human beings. It's all life, all the mess, all the glory, and you know, all the pain. So I think we can't stress that enough. I think that is also throughout life. It happens with people who are challenged in any way. You're not quite part of the team, not quite human, but we are.
And the way that people are treated, and maybe it's just a coping mechanism for people who are nurses, but I've seen it, even if you go to the hospital for a while with an old person, they'll treat them like a kindergartner.
Absolutely.
They'll say, come on and take your pill.
Yeah.
Or as if they were a puppy.
Yeah. I used to hate going with my mother because they'd always talk to me. My mother was very bright and could answer any questions, and I would always say, ask her, but I don't know why that is. I think people have difficulty being present, period. And I don't know, if you get older, maybe somebody, they just don't know what to expect. But I think they could at least give people the benefit of the doubt.
You know, as if they just assume that they are completely coherent and functioning.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Adult. Yeah, Barbara Ehrenreich actually wrote a very interesting article in Harper's about 8 years ago that I'll never forget about. She had breast cancer, and she wrote about it in some detail. And the culture of breast cancer is pink. Pink ribbons, pink candies, pink teddy bears. And she hated it.
Yeah.
She said, don't give me any of this stuff, and don't treat me like a child who needs a ballerina music box. I'm here for medical treatment.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the other thing that happens is people tend to, you know, they just lump you all into one group. And I do have a line, I say, you know, what I want, and I don't speak for all seniors, because believe it or not, we don't all want the same thing. And I think people forget that. You know, put us all together in a group, and you know, that's, but hey, I don't ever want that. I'd rather take my chances with, I guess there's a little of my character coming out in this character.
Well, and I was wondering about that, because there's another, I mean, not necessarily you personally, but there's a very interesting theme, which is that the woman portrayed, Beatrice, has a daughter who's, I guess, in her 40s, whom she really just doesn't like very much and never did.
Right.
And that's a very tough thing as the person gets older.
I think I've moved a little from that I think it was probably the version you got was a little harsher than I've finally arrived at. I think she does love her daughter deeply.
But she loves her, but she doesn't really like her.
They're so different. I have always, I as Beatrice, I must remember to make that distinction. I'm a doer. And I don't worry too much about, you know, my emotional state. Don't even notice it lots of times. I come from a Scottish heritage, you know, where you do your job and you're thrifty and you just forge ahead. Elizabeth is very timid, very shy. And I, as Beatrice, see her as this wonderful being that can do anything beautiful. I can't get it through my head that she won't do it like I would do it. So I push, and then I push her too far, and I've done some bad things as in raising her, and I regret that throughout the show, and I come to some peace with her. We do come to some small peace at the end, and I think there's a hope for an opening there. I couldn't leave it like that.
Right. Well, yeah. I think also a play that looks into the opportunities for wisdom and understanding that come with crisis in relationships between parents and children, because they know they don't have that much time left.
I think that's very, very true. And I think I'm lucky in creating the caricature of Irving, who is also not quite a character in the show, who's very, very wise and has asked me many, many wise things that really allows me to look at my experience in a different way. Sometimes doers don't always run into people who can allow them to do that, I think. Yeah.
We're talking about the one-woman show, Other Arrangements, that is going to be performed this weekend and next. So how did you start writing this show?
I had worked with Tanya Taylor, who I think is just such a treasure in our city. She's an incredible teacher and getting better all the time. I've worked a couple of times, done monologues with her, and she was doing a year-long solo performance to write your own show thing, and I took a great big gulp and just said, okay, I'm going to sign up. And I flopped around during the first few months, I'll tell you. I had no clue what I was going to write about. I was going to be a French courtesan at one point, and I don't know what else, some teenage girl. But I, through my visiting Irving, I decided on this show finally, and it just evolved. And it's interesting how a show evolves. In the course, we were required to prepare a monologue, memorized, about 13 to 15 minutes long every 2 weeks. And that challenge really is a way to get your show written, I will say. Otherwise, you know, you're going to sit around and tweet. Well, I would tweak it to death, I guess. Not Twitter, tweak it to death.
And so after I read the script, and then I looked for more information about you, and I had assumed that this was you and that I was going to be clearing a path here at the Santa Fe Baking Company for a wheelchair and all of that.
Right.
And since it wasn't you, it made me realize that there really is, in Santa Fe and maybe kind of in our culture right now in the United States in general, this culture of confession, telling your story.
Right, right.
And the idea that you're kind of telling somebody else's story and it's actually fiction above all things is kind of refreshing.
Oh, thank you. I think when you become my age, I'm a little tired of talking about myself. You know, I've been down that road before, and I love imagination. I love the work. I mean, I'm already thinking of my another show, and it's not going to be about me again. I mean, there might be a little bit, and of course it is about you, but I look for another way of telling truth than just my own confessional mode, so...
So this is happening along with, are there other performances from the Life Stories Project that are also going to be performed at some point?
There are. There has been one. Penny Sinone did hers the last two weekends. Was wonderful.
Oh, we had her on the other. I didn't realize they were in the, she was also
same
in your
class.
Group.
Mm-hmm. Actually, she didn't do the year long with me, but we're kind of doing a master class now, and she's in that with me. James Koskinas, he's going to do his show soon. Leela Dawkins is doing a show, and Kathleen Fontaine is doing a show. So there will be, all through the next few months, there will be our shows.
There's one thing that I thought could potentially be just straight out educational in this show, and that is for people who don't know what a stroke feels like or what you should do when you think you might be having one.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that.
It's actually what I've done is on the back of my program, I've put the signs of strokes, and there's some different signs for women, which was interesting to me to discover. I didn't know that beforehand either. I did a lot of research in a stroke, and what I had to do when I started writing it, I had a very bad stroke, and I talked like this all the time.
You did?
Know, before you could, because people do if they have a severe stroke. So I had to pull back on the severity of my stroke. So I've had a very mild stroke.
Oh, you the character.
Me the character, yeah. Yes. And because people would get very tired, of course, listening to that kind of voice. And I needed to be able to be animated and to have freedom of my head. So I have a stroke that I'm paralyzed from the shoulder to the toes. Just from my shoulder to my toes, so my neck and my head remain free. And even when I hit rehab, I can move my limbs slightly, my left side slightly. And that's fairly uncommon. Most strokes are a little bit more severe than that and take a little bit longer to, you know, to cure. Yeah.
So your character, what did she actually feel? What were her sensations?
When she first, the first sign of a stroke, and for her, was she felt that there was just this incredible pain just behind her eyes, so strong that it just, you know, almost flung her into a chair. It was just that strong. And she sat there for a few moments, and she really tried to get her breath, and it seemed to just lessen a little bit, which occasionally does, and then she tried to get in, and then it was just like somebody was driving an ice pick through her brain. And she was conscious enough to know she was in trouble. And she had the phone almost within reach, and she couldn't make the reach to the phone because her body just was so heavy and so tired, and it was on her left side. So she just had to lay back and have this stroke. And I think the pain abates after a while, but the lassitude in the body and the heaviness in the body is just, you're just unable to move.
And the longer you wait to get help, the worse it is.
Right. That's very, very true. Fortunately, I had this mild stroke because, you know, I didn't get help in the fiction until the next morning, really. So I had to have a mild stroke. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to do a show.
Another theme in the play that I thought was both interesting and comical was the youth and stupidity of the caring staff. And I'm sure there's lots of wonderful caring staff in places like this, but because of the character being as acerbic as she is, thinks, why am I supposed to talk to a social worker who's in her 20s
right.
about my problems when
right.
she hasn't had any life experience? And why are people not doing what they're supposed to do?
Right, right.
Even a touch of cruelty in some of them.
I think that is true, and I certainly know that there are many wonderful people, as you say, that are serving people. God bless them. I mean, it's a terrible job, and you have to have so much patience, but there's a lot of insensitivity. And, you know, to a person who has a stroke loses everything almost in the moment. You lose your sense of dignity. You lose your control over your body, your sovereignty over your body. Everything has to be done for you. And for a character like me, who's used to doing everything for everybody else, this is really difficult. And I think that must be very difficult for people to grasp, you know, for the staff to grasp who don't have, you know, you forget that this person was once a fully functioning, very bright, you know, very go-ahead human being. And there you've got this lump of body lying there. So, you know, it's difficult to make that transition, I think, for some people. And it's easy to infantilize, as we've said. It's easy to find people cute or sweet. I mean, my mother was like that. She was smart and she was acerbic and cute, you know.
Now, your character is also a gay liberationist.
A gay, yes. She was in, actually, she was in the forefront of a lot of the movements we go through. She was a gay liberationist. She worked very hard to find an AIDS hospice center in her very conservative community. And she was also a women's libist.
And made lots of trouble.
Made lots of trouble because her husband was a minister, and she took great offense to God always being referred to as he. As she said, if he's the unknowable and the unseeable, why do we assume it's a he? Why not she or he, she? So there's trouble there.
Lots of trouble.
Yeah.
We're talking to Maida Rogerson about her one-woman show, Other Arrangements. Now, you are an actress as well.
I've been an actor all my life, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your acting career.
Well, I'm Canadian. Well, I'm Canadian-American, actually. I'm a dual citizen. And most my career has been in Canada. And certainly since I've been here, really I haven't done anything except this. No, that's not true. I did a little television when I early came here, a few ads up for Los Alamos, as I recall. But by and large, my career has been in Canada. And like everywhere else in the world, you do everything. I was a song and dance person, and I did a lot of television, a lot of commercials, a lot of theater. Had a career, pretty good career, but it was doing everything.
What were your favorite types of, I mean, did you prefer theater or film?
Always live theater. Live theater is really where I come alive, I find most. I find, even doing the show, the sort of technical aspects of producing a show drive me crazy because I'm just not a detailed person and don't want to worry about that. And film's a lot about that. People are very clever film actors, really know what to do, and I never could really grasp that. I love live audience. I just come alive then, and it's just such a group effort, I always feel.
What are your favorite roles that you've played as a stage actress?
One of the very favorite I played, which never made it here, but it was a new music called Amy, which was based on the life of the evangelist, Amy Semple McPherson, and I played Amy. And that was great fun because she was a real character. I mean, she had this great four-square gospel church and lots, big following in California. And then one time she ran off with the guy who was actually doing the recording in her studio. And they went off and they disappeared for a week or 10 days. And she came up with this great story that she'd been kidnapped in the desert and everything. But, you know, it was all just...
She was just going off to a motel with...
Having a little fling for herself there. So that was wonderful. And I've loved the Neil Simon trilogy, those lovely, lovely roles, the mother I played. And I've always loved that, yeah.
So you also have worked on one of the Chicken Soup for the Soul books.
I did.
Which one?
Chicken Soup for the Soul at Work. Yeah, that was back in, I guess, mid-90s that we did that book. It was one of the earlier Chicken Soup Soul books. Now you can find one on, you know,
just
Chicken Soup
everything.
For the Broadcaster, Chicken Soup for whatever. But at a time, my husband is working in the business field. He was a consultant, and he was always coming back saying, everybody's so depressed. Well, if they're depressed then, I wonder where they are now. But anyway, so we knew Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen, who put the books on, and we approached with a proposal for a book that we hope would inspirit people at work, and that's how we started it. And it was a very difficult job getting stories. I was so surprised. People don't know how to tell stories. They kind of start when they were born, you know,
right.
And then somewhere, page 80, there's the story that you could use. So, but it was a really good experience. I really enjoyed it.
Very interesting. And I guess the project that you go through in the Project Life Stories monologue classes helps you to cut out all the extraneous stuff for people who are telling their own personal stories, especially.
You know, that's a very, very good point, because I notice with some of the people, they haven't learned that too much yet. And Tanya's so great. I mean, where's the story? Where's the point? Where's the story? Because you really have to fine tune, because it has to be interesting. I mean, I think I'm taking a huge risk. I'm one person sitting in a wheelchair. I don't even stand. So it has to be a good story to hold attention. That's the only way you can do it.
Maida Rogerson is the author and performer of the one-woman show Other Arrangements, and she will be performing Friday and Saturday, March 6th and 7th, and then again on the 13th and 14th at 8 o'clock in the evening at the Santa Fe Center for Spiritual Living on Camino de los Marques in Santa Fe. And for information and reservations, people can give a call to area code 505-699-3297. Maida, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very, very much. I enjoyed myself.
We're going to take a little break right now. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR.